For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Wanted to put together an episode here, getting back from the Big Ten tournament here. It's Sunday night. It's actually early Monday morning, almost 4 a.m. here. But wanted to talk a little bit about the signings of Ben Cleveland and Tylan Wallace. Want to also talk very briefly about Hummel and what he might mean to the team, Jake Hummel. Not going to talk about Cooper Rush. I'm going to leave that for a separate episode. So we're going to discuss that in more detail, a more significant signing there. But let's talk first about Cleveland and Wallace. Cleveland, a one-year deal, assuming it'll be near the vet minimum, perhaps some guaranteed money. He'll be 27 in August. I don't know what kind of guarantees they'd have to make him. Obviously, the DUI, a pretty serious concern. It's recent. The Ravens seem to be by it in some sense, and that's very unexpected given the relationship that seems to exist between Harbaugh and Cleveland, Cleveland's connection to the game and whatnot. But when it came down to it, I think a lot of why this was done comes down to two things. One is depth and the other is versatility. Let's start with depth. The Ravens had four UFA offensive linemen, a potential gutting of their unit in terms of having to replace four guys. Now, just before the start of the league year, they re-signed Ronnie Stanley, which was terrific. That was a very big re-signing. Does look now like a hometown discount was given. And, it's good for Ronnie. He'll be in the Ravens Ring of Honor. Certainly is beloved here. Gets to continue to play with Lamar Jackson, play for a ring. At some point, it probably becomes a little bit less about money. That said, it's great that he's willing to take a little bit less than for the Ravens. Wide range of outcomes. Talked about that on a separate episode. But anyway, that's one lineman they got back. Then they lost Patrick McCary, pretty big deal to the Jaguars. They lost Josh Jones to the Seahawks, and that left Ben Cleveland as their only other UFA on the offensive line. He re-signed, I presume, for 1 year, by the way. I've not heard contract details. I've not seen them yet out on OTC. When they get there, I'll give them to you. But again, I would assume 1 year near the vet minimum, perhaps a little bit of guaranteed money, maybe some incentives, whatever the case may be. It's not going to be a big money signing. This is a case where the Ravens are trying to get some cheap depth on the offensive line, and hope that'll work out. It's hard for me to explain in a sense. I think I have to go back to this for a moment, just how unexpected this re-signing was. And it's not just a matter of the DUI, which was bad. Obviously, that's an irresponsible thing. And we've heard other things going on in Cleveland's life. Personally, it's not my thing to go into those on this show. So if you want to look into it online, there's information. There's people talking about it, but I'm not going to do it. But I think more significant is what's going on in his professional life. And that's what John Harbaugh, the way he talks about him is different from other players. So Harbaugh's got basically three levels broadly that he'll talk about a player. If he has the general level where he wants to talk about almost every player on his team is the level of coach speak, where you're positively reinforcing the things the players do well, and presenting their performance in the best way possible. That's coach speak. And one of the things that makes Harbaugh a popular coach to play for is that he's not throwing players under the bus with any degree of regularity. On the other end, a more positive way, he'll come up with some ways to describe the way a player is playing that obviously are rehearsed, sometimes alliterative. I had the three B's about Chuck Clark, brilliant, bold, and something else. But it was three B's anyway. I remember that part about it. When you hear alliteration, you hear other kind of things that didn't just come up in the spur of the moment as he was coming up with this, then you're speaking at the podium, you know he loves that player. And that's certainly true of most of the Ravens stars, that he puts him in that kind of a light. The normal way. But then there's the other end. And there are a few players where he gets very salty with in terms of language, particularly when he's just frustrated with them on a professional level. They're not putting in the effort they should at the Castle. And, you know, one of the problems with Ben Cleveland that makes John Harbaugh's job difficult here is that he's played reasonably well when he's been on the field. Certainly played well enough that you'd want him as a backup, and certainly play him, you'd want him at a backup for, you know, a couple of million dollars a year, maybe a little bit more than that even. But, you know, when you really listen to all the things that John Harbaugh said about him over the years, in particular, you know, not winning the left guard job this last year, even after Voorhees' injury, you know, not winning at that point, and then saying, you know, Ben knows what he needs to do to win the job at left guard or get more playing time. He was given opportunities this summer. I mean, I think it was actually a pretty big deal that they gave him time at center, both during the preseason, during the regular season as well, that he was a backup there. It's actually a very big deal for his versatility that he's able to do that. He got a very brief trial, I believe, in 23. I may be thinking of Ben Powers, but it would have been Ben Powers in 23. Anyway, he got a brief trial in another season, and he had some disastrous snaps during the preseason. They pulled the plug on that very quickly. But this year, a little more of a trial, and got into a regular season game at center, which is, you know, to say the least, unusual. But I think that really keys on the reason why he may still be with the Ravens, which is versatility. And this is so weird that we're at this point, but Patrick McCary was the one, you know, kind of a universal outlet that you could plug in at any one of the positions and he could still play for you. And in his case, everyone from left tackle to right tackle plus OL6. In the case of Cleveland, he's seen time for the Ravens at left guard, center, and right guard all in this past season. He's seen time at right tackle. He may have seen some in 23, and I have to go back and actually look at that on a block by block basis to see where he might have done that. But he's definitely seen it in the preseason where he's played some right tackle, and they've looked at that as a potential option there. And he certainly played plenty of OL6 for the Ravens where he's been on there as an extra big man. I think we'll continue to see that. You know, the world is turned in a very weird way, and he is now the Ravens' most versatile offensive lineman. Now there are, I mean, you know, could some other play? Well, there's really nobody on the Ravens currently who could do it. Who could even play, you know, multiple positions? They might draft somebody who could be there. You know, Voorhees could maybe play right guard or left guard. No experience at center so far. Linderbaum is a center only. Falele, I think, is a right guard only, which is very limiting. Of course, you might say he's a guard tackle. So that's a little bit of versatility. Maybe they're not versatility we want to tap into. I don't think anybody wants to see Falele at tackle again. But then, you know, Rosengarten and Stanley are Stanley's left tackle only, and Rosengarten is tackle only, whether it's left or right. So yeah, Cleveland is the guy. He's the versatile player that the Ravens have now on the offensive line. It's the world has changed in such a way that you don't even recognize it in some way. What that allows the Ravens to do is make these one-for-one changes if an injury occurs that reduce any loss due to continuity. Now, of course, Cleveland would be in if he had to come in at right tackle or he had to come in at right guard or left guard, wherever it might be. But the continuity loss is only hopefully at that position, and Cleveland hopefully assimilates himself fairly quickly to the team around him. And the Ravens have used that strategy with good success. They've rarely done the parking lot puzzle changes where you make three changes because of one injury kind of thing. Did happen a little bit last year because they moved McCary from a shared right tackle responsibility over to left guard when they had the Voorhees injury. In a sense, that's kind of like changing two positions. But since Rosengarten was already getting part-time at right tackle, I really consider that more or less a one-for-one change. A more of a three-for-one change would be what they went into the 2012 playoffs with, where they moved McKinney to take Orr's spot at left tackle, moved Orr to right tackle, and moved Kelechi Osemele to left guard. That's the kind of three-for-one where you take a big continuity risk with that kind of a change. So, Ben Cleveland now really could provide value to the Ravens in that. I think it's also possible Ben Cleveland could win the left guard job. We haven't seen enough from Voorhees to know that he's anything but the incumbent at this point. I think with McCary gone, he probably is. He's played the most at left guard, and certainly the most recently. So he's got that going for him, and he's played pretty well in a late season game. I think it was against Houston when he came in and he saw some positive time when McCary had an illness. Good things to look at there from Voorhees. Did not look great early in the season. We still don't know how much his strength is really going to be an asset or if his body is really right for the position. He's going to have to learn how to pull. He might be the most gifted player the Ravens have in terms of interior offensive line as an athlete. Obviously, I'm not talking about Linderbaum. I'm talking about either guard spot and the ability to pull. And that's something the Ravens are very short on right now. Falele just does not have the proper body type or feet to pull. Particularly, he can get behind in a pass blocking situation and they often pull on pass blocking plays, by the way, where you're showing that motion of a guard to kind of sell the run concept and freeze linebackers, but you're also getting that guy over to the other side where he often has a blocking responsibility, that guard, to pick up somebody often coming from level two. And you got to be quick to get over there. And a couple of times in the same game, in fact, I'm forgetting which one it was, Falele was late to the punch and couldn't get a block made there. So you really need a quicker guy, a guy who knows the dance steps, gets out of his stance quickly, makes the right movements with his feet that Joe D used to teach so well. To get over there. And I think, it's more likely Voorhees is that guy. Cleveland is probably in the middle, also kind of a little bit of a lumbering guy who doesn't make a ton of sense in terms of pulling. So anyway, point is, Ravens are very short on true pulling guards. And in particular, that means the left guard position, they've really got to get that figured out since their offense depends on a lot of power concepts like that, like pulling. It's a big part of what they do. It's a big part of their misdirection. Their counter plays as well involve frequently a guard pulling. Now, they can do center tackle pulls when they do a counter play that make it less the guard's responsibility, which is a darn good thing on the Ravens, obviously. But still, they rely heavily on the guards to pull, and probably about as much as any NFL team does right now. I don't have good pull numbers on other teams, but I know how much the Ravens pull now in their offense. Peaked out during the Roman years, but it's still very high, and how much they did in years pre-Roman, and there's no comparison between the two. There were, even Yanda at his peak. Yanda did have a 19 pull game in the 2009 AFC wildcard game. But that was the most I think I'd ever seen by a guard. And during the Roman era, there were several occurrences where Bozeman and others got up into the 20s. And Bradley Bozeman, not a special athlete by any sense, but where they were doing a lot of pulling. Anyway, Cleveland's going to win that left guard job. I'm not saying it's impossible. I think it is possible, but he's going to really need to generate some value as pulling. And I think it is something that bodes against him. On the other side, I think his size next to Linderbaum, the different body types, bodes very well for combination blocks. You can do a lot with that. So Cleveland is a fairly ferocious guy in terms of going into an opponent and being able to generate space and movement of that defensive tackle. And in particular, when you have a two-on-one, you got to just knock the other guy off his pins. And one of the things that's been not perfect is that Cleveland probably doesn't have ideal timing in that regard on those plays, and Linderbaum doesn't have ideal stick to it on those plays. Linderbaum has been, frankly, I've been a little bit disappointing in this single aspect of his run blocking, where otherwise I think he's very good getting level two, making his blocks there. That hasn't been a problem. But when he's the guy who's releasing into level two, I kind of felt like he's released too early sometimes without really seeing that player off balance and has left the trailing player at a disadvantage. So that's something I want to see better out of Linderbaum, working with either of these very large men to either side of him. There's also plenty of times where Linderbaum is going to be the trailing player. He's going to be the guy who has to hold on to that block. And then it's important. It's really imperative that, whoever it is, whether it's Fa'alele or Cleveland or Voorhees or whoever it may be, gets that guy's knocked off his pins, such that the off balance nature of that trailing defensive tackle, the defensive tackle that Linderbaum is blocking, gives him an advantage where he might not normally have it. So really important combination blocks. They benefit from these varying body types along the offensive line. And hopefully that's something that that will be good. What else do we have to talk about here? Cleveland played just 52 offensive snaps in 2024. That includes his time as a sixth offensive lineman. So that is extremely minimal play. Josh Jones was in there ahead of him for quite a bit of the season. So was Rosengarten while he was splitting time with McCary at the right tackle position. So it really ended up being a very limited role for him. Frankly, a lost year in a lot of ways. His big highlight of 2024 is a blocked field goal. That's a special teams role. Great to have it, but it's just not that important. He also plays on the field goal blocking team. Sorry, field goal blocking team is the defensive unit, but he plays on the field goal kicking team as well, along the line. And that's an important thing for a backup lineman to be able to do. If you look at the depth on a week by week basis for this team, you've got five guys who are certain to be active every week: Stanley Voorhees, Linderbaum, Fa'alele, Rosengarten. I think if you look at the reserves, Cleveland will certainly be active every week, and that gives you six. Samak, to me, goes into the season as a ninth offensive lineman. If they drafted three linemen, it's possible he doesn't have a job. If they draft two guys, which I would presume is the most likely number at this point, then the two new guys are in there as developmental linemen to some degree. If it's a second-round pick and a third-round pick that they take at guard and tackle, respectively, they're going to try and develop those guys more quickly. They're going to get playing time more quickly, and they're more, significant components of the Ravens' future. If it's a fourth-round pick and a sixth-round pick, then they're going to develop developmentally. They're going to take their time, and they probably will not get much playing time in their first season. They would be the seventh man up, and Cleveland would be the first off the bench wherever you had a problem. So hopefully, you don't want to ever in a season, if you can do it, have more than six offensive linemen who even see time of any meaningful type. That's okay if you want to give a guy some mop-up time or get a guy in the second half of a game that's won. That's fine. I'm not talking about that. But you don't want to have that player starting games if you can avoid it. And the Ravens were very fortunate this last year. They're a very extremely healthy year along the offensive line and didn't have to do that. Another thing that's come up is, and this is all over Twitter, why do they bother signing him when John Harbaugh's not going to give him a chance? Okay, so a few things about that. Technically, this is in Eric DaCosta's silo. So Eric DaCosta can say, in theory, screw you, John. I think Cleveland's a good player. I'm watching the same practices you are. I'm seeing something different. We're keeping him. And if you don't like it, get Steve Bisciotti to increase your responsibilities to be general manager. And obviously, I'm not suggesting that he really do that. I don't think in this case, given the what's happened with Ben Cleveland, that there is any way in hell that EDC did this unilaterally. He obviously talked to John Harbaugh and consulted about this. And they probably actually consulted much more broadly in the building, perhaps even including Bisciotti, to say, hey, what does this do for our organization to have a guy who has made some bad judgments in his life, including this DUI, but not limited to this DUI? What do we think? His work ethic has been a question in the past. What about that? Failing the test they do at the beginning of spring training, the endurance test, conditioning test. That's been a thing for Cleveland. I mean, is it something that we can live with? So I think it was very generally discussed before this move was made, and it became a one of price and value. And they said, we get a lot of versatility, and in a very Ravens-like way, they probably went across the organization and talked about all the value they get from Cleveland.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, about takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
O'Reilly.
Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Versatility, depth, and you know, having a sixth guy who actually has some experience going into the season. You know, you're looking to create a nine to make eight OL room, generally speaking. When I say that, you have nine guys that are on your roster, on your 53-man roster. You have eight of those active on game day because the roster, the game day activation rules highly favor you to do it. The offensive linemen, if you have eight, you effectively get an extra offensive line position, or you get an extra roster spot. So everybody has eight on game day. So I think that, you know, it's been discussed from a pros and cons perspective, and they came out that this is a right player, right price situation. I don't think it has to be a long-term deal. I think it may very well be a short-term deal where we look at 2025, and this ends up being a stopgap to allow for the development of draft picks, of Voorhees, of Samak, potentially. That doesn't specifically mean anything to the Ravens 2026 and beyond Ben Cleveland time. But if I was talking about what I am hoping for in 2025, I want a high effort off season. I want a camp that leaves no doubt that he has a roster spot. So it's also been something that's been discussed, is do the Ravens sign him with effectively no guaranteed money, where he's saying, hey, you want to compete for a job? I really don't sense that that's how the Ravens are seeing this. It wouldn't surprise me if there is some guaranteed money in there, and it wouldn't surprise me even if it's vet minimum, by the way, even if it's vet minimum, you know, 200,000, 300,000, they just said, okay, we're certainly giving you that. And they even guaranteed the whole salary for that matter. I don't think that would be an unreasonable thing to do, because I think the Ravens really need it. I think he's, you know, right now he's sixth on the depth chart, and there's the most versatile guy. That's a pretty darn safe spot to be if you're thinking about what's my chances not to make the team in camp. Now, that said, Ben Cleveland has done some self-sabotaging things in the past by all accounts, and hopefully that will not occur again. So, you know, that's something that we would look at that. I don't have any specific target for snaps for a player like Cleveland, because my actual target number is pretty close to zero. It's whatever his OL6 snaps would be during the year. So if he's going to get, I don't know, 50 OL6 snaps, let's say, that'd be fine. And zero as a replacement would be fine. I'd probably like a little bit more than that, because I'd like there to be some blowouts where he's getting time. But you know, if he had 100 snaps, I think it could still be a very good thing for the Baltimore Ravens, that they basically have this good line continuity and a lack of injuries. I think that would be a positive thing. So that's how I see the Ben Cleveland acquisition or the re-signing. It is very surprising to me still that the Ravens did this, but the Ravens have a wonderful way of being able to put the past behind them, largely because they don't discuss much of the past with the outside world. So they're not, yeah, they're talking the castle about what's going on. And sometimes Harbaugh will let something, you know, salty go about a player. But largely they haven't, you know, berated Ben Cleveland in a way that he couldn't, you know, show his face around the castle again. So this is a good thing. And it allows for these kind of transactions to occur. It even allows, I mean, they're pissed off, like, you wouldn't believe it, Deontay Johnson. But it didn't mean that they can't re-sign Deontay Johnson, basically as a move to get a comp pick or get a comp offset, we'll call it that way. So it's the Ravens have a remarkable way of eventually deciding things based on value, not personality, not clashes. They're very good about that. All right, let's move on. Tylan Wallace, outstanding signing, by the way. It was one of the ones I'm really happy about. I thought, you know, he was a good candidate to get a qualified veteran contract. They did not end up doing that. They gave up all their qualified veteran money to Patrick Ricard, but they signed Wallace pretty darn cheaply. 1 year, $2.1 million. They're actually using void years on this deal to kick $744,000 of this into 2026, effectively. And since Wallace is a player, they might re-sign again. They could potentially have some of that value be offset to a future contract, I believe. So that's still something that they could derive value from. Wallace will be 26 in May, so still very young for the free agent market. Obviously, not a guy who is going to threaten to displace Bateman, Flowers, or Hopkins in any way. But he does bring a broad set of talents to the team as a combined wide receiver and special teams player, which is why I like the transaction so much. He is by far the Ravens' best run-blocking wide receiver. He kept showing up on big highlights for Derrick Henry this season, for Lamar Jackson as well, you know, getting out there and blocking in space. I think he's very good at keeping his feet in level two and pivoting through a block, which is something you really only see with the guys who really want to be great wide receiver run blockers. Miles Boykin, for all the things people didn't like about him as a receiver, he was a hell of a run blocker too, and he really had the physical tools to dominate L2 and in particular L3 players, if he's blocking a safety or a corner, to be able to have a big advantage, to be able to wall that guy off, and to be able to maintain a block for a long time. And Wallace has some of those same traits without being nearly as big. He has to make up for some of that with feistiness and with smarts in terms of keeping his feet on those. You don't see a player like Wallace. You don't see it generally from wide receivers. Wide receivers often get shed for blocks, but they don't usually lose their feet like offensive linemen do. Offensive linemen feel like they have to lunge, and that's when they get themselves in trouble in L2 and L3. More often, you know, it would often be better if they could just keep their feet and act as a positional barrier for a player crossing their face and getting to the ball carrier, but they don't necessarily do as good a job with that. Wide receivers, they generally keep their feet well, but they can get shed. Wallace has been pretty good about not getting shed, and that's something, it's definitely a major part of his game. So very happy that he's back for that. There's another value to it. He brings a kind of a fresh legs value to this Ravens receiving core. That's actually getting to be a pretty deep receiving core, and Wallace should probably see less snaps if things work out well for the Ravens and they don't have a big year for injuries. But you know, you look at the what is likely to be a six man core here. You have Flowers, Bateman, Hopkins, Tez Walker, who they're going to have to get on the field some this next year, and also probably get more special teams value out of. Tylan Wallace, who's obviously a guy who's gotten on the field a lot. He had 343 offensive snaps this last year, 280 in special teams, which is not insignificant by any stretch, but 343 on offense is very significant. So he's not a non-trivial piece of the offense. And then you got to figure they're probably going to get another wide receiver as a draft pick. Hopkins, the hope would be, frankly, that he would lose his job to one of these the guys that are a little further down on the depth chart, whether that's Walker or the draft pick. I don't think he'll lose his job specifically to Wallace, but Wallace is an extremely valuable and versatile player who can be on the field on any down, but is more valuable probably on early downs to be on the field so he can get in there, potentially contribute more to run plays, also get a sneaky reception every once in a while. Wallace had a terrific year as a receiver. 16.1 yards per target is just about the best in Ravens history. It is, if you set the target limit right, certainly with 10 targets, you're okay with Wallace being the guy. He caught 11 of 12 balls, 1.72 yards per route run. Some people prefer that to yards per target. I really don't. I think the yards per target is typically a more telling statistic. But Wallace had the 1.72 yards per route run was essentially the same as Bateman. In fact, his was exactly 1.72. Likely was 1.71. Andrews was 188, so a little bit ahead of him. And Flowers was 2.25. So Flowers was getting the most balls. He was the most of a designated receiver that the Ravens had. The one thing that I think that you wouldn't look at his receiving years and say in any way he had a bad year, but he had a terrible yards per target career going into 2024. He'd had only 15 targets, and this is bad, 67 yards. So we're talking like 4.5 yards per target coming into this year. In one season, he bumped his yards per target up to 9.6 career. So he had a big year last year, was always very poor before that. And I think some of that is kind of figuring out how to use him. And some of it is, you know, he had a huge breakaway play that is a substantial portion of that total, but he still would have been close to 10 yards a target, even if you take that out of there, the 80 yard play or whatever it was that he had earlier in the season. So anyway, hell of a season for Wallace as a receiver. He's a 4-unit performer on special teams, kickoffs and punts, coverage and returns. He did have some problem fielding punts this year in the return game. He can still do other things, by the way, on the punt return unit. So he doesn't have to return the punt specifically. He can also be in there to try and block a punt, to be a blocker of a gunner, et cetera. He's still a guy they'd want on the field for all those things. But he had some problems getting under the ball. The Ravens are going to really have to, by the way, figure that out in camp. The kickoff return game, not that important. I think they have guys who can do it with Keaton Mitchell and with Justice Hill or somebody else they might find. I think they have enough bodies to handle the kickoff return duties well. But the punt return, they have not seemed to be able to find the guys who can get to the spot and track the football well. And so that'll be a big need. And hopefully Wallace has a better year in that way. I do expect him to compete for that job. I just don't expect him to automatically have it. And that might be how they choose a late round cornerback or a wide receiver draft pick that they have, particularly if they don't go for a wide receiver in the first three rounds, where you really got to be going for receiving talent first and almost only, but certainly first and foremost. If you have another guy you want to get in a later round, that's fine. And then you're looking for, how can this guy help me on gadget plays? How can he help me on special teams? And you want that combined value. The Ravens don't really have another guy on their current wide receiver group who gives them that. So I think it would make a lot of sense for Wallace to again compete for that role, and we'll see where that goes. Other than that, I think Wallace could be the special teams captain this year. He does have some competition, including another guy I want to talk about briefly, which is Jake Hummel. But Board and Harrison both moved on, and they were the big two special teams guys. The Ravens lost 800 special team snaps between those two guys, who are, you know, all over key players in their four most significant units. And actually, I think Harrison and possibly Board also played some on the field goal block team as well. So those are guys that are very hard to replace. And it's one of the reasons why the Ravens got this next guy, who's Jake Hummel, special teams ace, UFA, signed from the Rams. He was actually, I believe, going into his fourth year, so he could have been tendered. Did not quite have the resume for that to occur, like even on a low round tender where the Rams just would have had the right to match the offer. So first of all, I don't think this is going to affect the Ravens in comp picks in any way. I don't know the exact amount he signed for, but it's a low money, not likely to qualify contract that likely will not affect him, despite the fact it was signed during the period where comp picks are impacted. He's probably more effective on special teams than Harrison was, but he won't give you the defensive value that either Harrison or Board will. Harrison had some problems in terms of his tackling, but he also gave you a lot of versatility to play outside linebacker or inside linebacker. Not going to get that from Jake Hummel. Jake Hummel is really known as a two-down thumper on the inside. He could do that again and take over a role that Harrison basically had for a portion of the year after the Ravens kind of backed off a little bit on Trenton Simpson. So, ideal situation. Simpson takes over this year. Tyler Santucci connects with him. They get a lot more out of him. And we see a player who develops properly in 2025. Hopefully that'll happen. In the case of Hummel, he did play 78 defensive snaps last year. 51 of those came in week 18. Of course, the Rams were waiting to play their wild card game, trying to rest some players, at whether they were inactive or active, but he got 51 of his 78 snaps for the year in that game. I think if you're looking for leadership of the special teams unit, I think it comes down to three players as I currently see it. Tylan Wallace would be one, Sanusi Kane would be another, and Jake Hummel would be the third. So one of those guys is probably going to wear a C patch this next year. We're probably going to see him out at midfield for some coin flips and whatnot. This means something, I think, to the players. It's a hell of a nice thing to have your agent be able to tell another team is that, hey, he was the captain of special teams for the Baltimore Ravens. You know how seriously they take special teams, right? The Ravens have brought in these guys, moved off them, moved on them kind of thing. And Hummel could be another guy like Board or Harrison who gets a bigger chance at a real opportunity somewhere else. I think that would be the hope for him developmentally. The Ravens going to keep him long-term as a special teams guy. It could happen, but again, none of these things are guaranteed in terms of the years. So we'll see how that works out. In the case of Wallace too, actually really surprised that there wasn't another team out there who wanted to take a bigger chance on him, because I just think he brings a team an awful lot in terms of these varied values. And, you know, I was thinking, somebody, you know, look at this crazy free agent market. Is somebody going to give him 2 years, $8 million, maybe? You know, the kind of contract they gave Devin Duvernay last year. Not out of the question, you know, and nobody did, apparently, and, you know, must have faced a pretty stale market, known it was going to be trouble, and, you know, signs for, you know, a premium to the minimum, which is nice, because you wouldn't want the Ravens to give all that money to Ricard and not recognize Wallace in some way. But I look at those two contracts and they say they got them just about as cheap as I would have hoped. You're making Tylan Wallace is making 150% of the vet minimum, and for all intents and purposes, Ricard is making exactly the vet minimum for cap purposes. So really good signings there by EDC. I think he's having a great offseason, by the way, in terms of picking up the right pieces for the organization to succeed. And letting some players go that, frankly, they just got a little bit out of the Ravens' price range. I mean, Board and Harrison were popular players. Board had a good year in 2024, both defense and special teams. But you can't keep him at the price that he was offered. Harrison, 2 years for $10 million for the Steelers. I mean, I hate losing players to the Steelers, but if you're going to lose a player who you at least know what his weaknesses are, you play the Steelers twice a year. If Harrison's on the field, Greener on the field. I mean, you know how to attack those players. So anyway, those are some good options there for the Ravens. So good. I think they made the right player, right price decision in each case. Anyway, that's going to do it for tonight. Again, I'll have a episode this week about Cooper Rush. I want to look at a little bit more at his film. Because he got some starts. He actually, you know, had a 4-4 quarterback rating for the Cowboys this last year, which is pretty darn good considering some of the problems they had as a team. So we'll talk a little bit about Cooper and what he brings as a backup to Lamar. How much of a stylistic change is it? everybody's some stylistic change. Even if they got Jalen Hurts to be the backup, it would still represent a stylistic change. But this is an interesting pickup for the Ravens. It's a fairly significant amount of money, and hopefully they never have to find out what Cooper Rush does on the field. Anyway, separate episode for that. Thanks for listening. If you're out there and you'd like to do a film study short of any type, hit me up. This is always a great time to do it. If you want to look at a UFA, that's cool. If you want to look at a trade possibility, that's fine. UFAs in particular, give me a second tier guy. A guy that's likely to be signed after the draft is ideal. So a veteran player who would really fit where the Ravens are right now. So a lot of people wanted Calais Campbell. We'll have an episode on that this week. Matthew Judon falls into that category, I think. Episode this week coming out as well about that. But I think there are plenty of guys who should be quite cheap that the Ravens can really get value out of. And I know a lot of people don't like bargain bin shopping, but this is the nature of the game. The Ravens have all of their core cornerstone players in place already. They have the great quarterback. I don't think anybody's doubting that. They have Derrick Henry for another year. You know, they have receiving talent. They've got tight end talent. They re-signed Ronnie Stanley. They've got Linderbaum. They've got Hamilton. They've got Roquan. They've got Humphrey. I mean, this is a star-laden team. What they need is the background scenery. These are those other pieces that fit really well with those stars to make it work. I know people get upset, but I'm not in any way about where this Ravens team is this offseason in terms of making their moves. So very excited about it. Thanks for listening, folks, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits apply over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. Oh, oh.